Māori is an endangered language, and if children stop learning it, it will die. I decided I wanted my children to learn their native language. I found a preschool that teaches children Māori before they enter school where they will learn English. The schools are called language nests. In 1981, a group of Māori leaders saw that Māori was endangered and dying. They decided to do something. They did not want to wait for the government to do anything, so they got together and came up with the idea of preschools where children could learn Māori. Now there are over 700 language nests and more than 13,000 children who are bilingual in Māori and English. Language nests are a big part of Māori education. I also wanted to learn more about my language and culture. Now, there are classes for adults like me. The teachers are all older Māoris, usually grandparents. We meet in neighbourhood centres. There are also week-long classes where adults can go and study. In these courses, no English is spoken all week. Everything is Māori.
When I was in college, I spent a semester studying in London. And even though we speak the same language, English people and people from the U.S. are very different. I guess I felt that people from the U.S. have a bad reputation. Some people think we're loud and that we speak our minds too much. So I tried to listen a bit more and not be so assertive, if that makes sense. I wanted to make a good impression. I suppose I shouldn't have worried about it, but I did. I couldn't help it. I loved the lifestyle there. Going out for afternoon tea was fun, and I really loved the old buildings. I mean, they're really old. We don't have anything that old in the U.S., so that part was pretty amazing. Another thing was the TV. The British have a different sense of humor, very dry. I really like it. Their comedy shows on TV are really funny. I'd have to say my experience was a positive one overall, except for the rainy weather, of course. I had trouble getting used to that.
So, you've been a driving instructor for nearly 20 years now, haven't you, Peter?
Mm-hmm.
Is it an easy career to start in?
I think it's probably easier now than it was when I started. You have to get a dual control car. That means the instructor can put on the brakes if things go wrong. They're quite expensive, but you don't have to buy your own these days. Many of the larger driving schools supply them.
And is that different from when you started?
Oh, yes, it is. For the first 10 years, I had to drive without dual controls. That was quite scary. Then, as an independent instructor, I had to pay for them myself.
I see. So, what personal qualities do you need to be a successful instructor?
Well, you must enjoy working with people. Of course, you have to be a good driver yourself and understand all the rules of the road. Most importantly, though, you must stay really calm. You mustn't get angry with students or shout at them, whatever happens.
Of course. Do your students sometimes do dangerous things, then?
Some of them do, yes. Learner drivers are very unpredictable. Some of them are very nervous, especially women. And some of the men are overconfident. One of my students had to take his driving test 11 times before he passed. He was a student of mine for over 8 years. Not much of a teacher, am I?
And was he your worst experience?
Well, no. Twice my students have crashed my car and destroyed it completely. Fortunately, I didn't have to pay for a new car because I have professional insurance. But they were nasty experiences. I hurt my back in the latest accident and I've decided to retire in January. I'm taking a part-time office job instead.
Oh, well, what do you think you'll miss about being a driving instructor?
Probably the freedom, I think. I mean, I'll have to work fixed hours in my new job, and I'm not looking forward to that. On the other hand, I won't have to be in dangerous, stressful situations all the time at work, and that'll be great. But I've met so many people and had some real adventures.
I bet you have. Tell me more.
Hey, Sergio, do you ever have recurring dreams?
Yeah, sure. Why, Kate?
Well, I had one last night. I'm back in high school, and in my dream, the school looks mostly the same as it did, but much bigger. The weird thing is, although I'm 23 years old, I'm back in high school with all these 15-year-olds. It's very embarrassing. No one seems to notice that I'm much older and shouldn't be there in the first place, but still, it's very uncomfortable. I keep thinking, what am I doing here? Well, I know it must be the end of the school year because everyone is talking about final exams. And that's when it hits me that I've forgotten to go to math class all year, and there's a big math test today.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I'm totally unprepared. So I start to go to class, but then I realize I can't find it. No matter how far, how many hallways, I just can't find it. I know I'm late for class, and this really worries me. Finally, I wind up in my math class, but it's almost over, so I've missed most of the test, and I think I'm going to fail or something. Basically, that's the dream.
That's a bad one. Do you have that dream a lot?
Sometimes. I guess it means that I'm worried or overwhelmed about something that is happening in my life.
Yeah, I sometimes have this bad dream. I guess it's really a nightmare. I'm in danger, but I'm not sure from what, and I can't move or scream or anything. I can feel something coming closer and closer to me. You know, it's really strange, because usually in the dream, I'm exactly where I am in real life, like in my own bed, in my bedroom, and everything is very realistic. The only part that is dreamlike is that I can't move. Sometimes I can't even open my eyes, or I can only open one eye. Usually I have to alert someone or possibly save someone, although the person often changes. Anyway, I can't do anything because I can't move. It's really terrifying.
Yeah, it sounds terrifying. So what do you think it means?
I'm not sure, but you know, I think the dream means that I'm feeling there's something in my life that I can't control, although I feel like I should be able to. Once I had the dream when one of my friends was very sick, and I just felt completely helpless. I hate feeling that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
My name is Alexander Milas. I am the editor of Metal Hammer magazine. Metal Hammer magazine is a heavy metal publication that's been going for 25 years. It's difficult to describe how many people actually work at Metal Hammer magazine because you have so many different subsets of employees. You have the editorial staff who simply contribute to what actually goes into the magazine. But then we have 10 photographers, we have 15 writers placed around the world, a lot of freelance contributors as well. We have 4 people on our events team, we have 5 people on advertising, 3 marketing, a subscriptions department, and obviously we have our publisher as well. It's very difficult to describe what the editor of any magazine does simply because we're no longer simply printed publications. We've extended into other media as well. We have an award show every year that I organize. We have 10 bands playing at that award show. We also give out 17 awards, and they're all sponsored awards. That's also something that requires a lot of liaising with event staff as well. At the same time, you're also running a magazine. We produce a CD every month. We also produce a lot of different sort of brand extensions like radio shows and podcasts.
I am the Dark Lord and editor of Metal Hammer magazine, and this is your Metal News at 10.
And managing all of those things and the staff who are employed to do that is really what my job is. It's not just making a magazine. One of the best things about my job is that I'm always seeing bands. I travel a lot, and I also get to go to pretty much any concert I want to because it's actually part of my job, which is a pretty cool job to have, I have to say. I have lots of ambitions for the future. I think more importantly, it's just simply about contentment and feeling satisfied in your job. I feel like I've come a long way in terms of my career, but there's always more to be done. I would love to do more broadcasting. I want to write books. I have yet to publish one, but I'm working on one now, and they're all sort of little sets of achievements, little boxes I want to tick as time goes by. We have a very, very loyal fan base, you know, people who write in. They love things you do sometimes, they hate things that you do sometimes, and that's really what gets me up in the morning, because at the bottom of all of the talk of brand extensions, obviously we have circulation to think about and all those things, there's a real idealism there as well. You know, this is journalism, and you're doing something important, and it's important to believe in what you're doing.
It's great to see all of you. Welcome to the training workshop. This time next week, you'll be dealing with real customers. Working at the airport information desk is a great job, but it can be a tough job. You need to know all about the airport, the airlines, and the facilities. You also need to be sensitive, and you need to be resilient, because people who are traveling are often very tired and can be difficult. So, let's go through a few what-if situations and find out what you'd do. Okay, customer number one walks up to the desk and says that he missed his flight and there isn't another flight until tomorrow night. What would you do, Sammy?
I'd offer to call the airport hotel and make a reservation for him. I'd also check whether he had a frequent flyer card or was entitled to any special deals or discounts.
Fine. Luckily, customer number one is reasonable. I'm afraid we can't say that about customer number two. Customer number two has missed his connecting flight. He gets agitated and blames the airport. He says he never would have missed the flight if the airport weren't so big and confusing. What would you do in that case, Andrea?
Well, I'd explain that there is an interactive map on the website so people can plan everything before they arrive at the airport. I'd say that we advise people to allow plenty of time between connecting flights. I'd tell him that if he'd left a little more time, he wouldn't have missed his flight. And I'd probably say that the information desk attendants are ready and willing to help passengers find their way and tell him he should have asked them for directions.
That might not work. You might need to show a little more compassion. We'll try this one again in a role play. Before we do that, though, we've got customer number three. Customer number three comes up to the desk. She is angry because her flight has been delayed by bad weather. She's sure that by the time she gets to the meeting she is on her way to, they'll have been discussing the issues for an hour and all the key decisions will have been made. What are you going to do about it, Ricardo?
I'd explain to her that it's a shame she missed her flight, but that, really, the weather is nobody's fault.
That is true, but it usually isn't a very popular response. In fact, it usually infuriates people. Does anyone else have an idea? Hannah?
Well, I'd probably say I know what she means. It's so frustrating. Then I'd suggest that she email the people who are organizing the meeting or offer to do it for her. Then, depending on which airline she's flying with, I'd try to get her into one of the business lounges. That's if she hadn't already been directed there by the airline.
Nice one. Okay, let's try some of these role plays. All right, let's pair off.